This call is being recorded.
Hey, everybody. It's Colette Baron-Reed. I'm super, super psyched and excited to invite. And I'm so happy that she agreed to do this. My girlfriend, Denise Lynn, all of you know, actually, you'll be able to see her bio underneath her little page here. If you want to know more about Denise, her books, her products, etc. But, you know, Denise is somebody that I really look up to. I admire. You know, I go to for advice. I know she's a very good friend of mine now, but she's somebody I really admire. And so when I asked her to be participate in this, really, this is a real and raw, off-the-cuff conversation about reality creation and who helps us create that reality and spirit. And I asked all my most favorite people to talk about their experience with spirit, what it means, who helps us, who guides us, how we co-create the world, not by ourselves. It's not just alone, and how we're in this extraordinary, incredible, collaborative universe where there are beings and energies that we don't see that sometimes show up in our lives to guide us to ensure that our purpose here in the world, our soul's purpose, is able to manifest in the appropriate form. So, Denise, thank you so much for joining me. Sorry, my dogs are barking.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, yeah, thanks. And thanks so much for your great testimonial for my book, Uncharted. And you know, you did also, you wrote the foreword for my book, The Map, and it has to be one of my most favorite things I've ever read. I keep rereading it. Anytime I think that I'm going off track, I go, look what Denise said about me. There she goes. Anyway, we have to thank your husband. I know you're in California, and I'm up in Canada, and you are having a heat wave, and you sent your husband outside, so we're going to try and talk fast so he can come in.
It sounds weird. We're camping out in a little place we call the shack while our house is being built.
Right.
And it's like we are about 3 inches from each other at any point. So
oh.
He very graciously said while I did the interview that he would step out, and it's very hot out there. So yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, David. We love him. So, Denise, you have a ton of stories, and actually I knew you many years. You were my client before you became my friend and confident, and before you're actually the real reason that I am with Hay House, too. You're the one that went to bat for me after telling me for about 8 years that I should go get a book deal. I'm a slow learner, and you really are. I know you were my mom in a past life. So you've got a bazillion stories, and I know that whenever you talk, it just always reminds me that there's so much in this world, this invisible world that is our primary reality, that we can't see, but they interject in our lives. So I'm just going to shut up, and I'm going to let you talk.
Well, here's what's weird. Right before we started this, you and I were talking about, you know, about the other speakers and what their subjects were, and my inner voice kept saying, talk about angels, talk about angels. So I'm like, but this is not about angels. And then my inner voice says, no, tell Colette, talk about angels.
All
so
for
I
the
said,
angels.
Colette, it's weird, but my other voice is saying, talk about angels. She said, Denise, talk about angels.
No, because
I believe
angels help us, and I'm dying to hear some stories. And everybody wants to hear their stories, your stories. Come on, like, Phil.
Well, here's the thing. In life, I've learned to trust that voice. So if a voice is saying, you know, eat your pill. If your voice is saying, you know, go to town now, or don't pick up that phone, or pick it up. You know, I've found that it's really, really important to listen. And so even if it seems strange, my voice saying, talk about angels, like, all right, I'm going to follow
that. Yeah, I believe it too.
And, you know, when I was growing up, I never, ever could have imagined that something like an angel would be real. My parents were, and we've talked about this, my parents were scientists, and they were like atheists, and they said, if you cannot prove it scientifically, it does not exist. And my father used to say, oh, religion's a crutch, you know, that old quote.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a near-death experience when I was 17, and when I was in the hospital, I was in a tremendous amount of pain. And I was in so much pain, I couldn't even sit up to push the button. You know, you push a button at night to get the nurse to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept thinking, I wish someone would come. I wish someone would help me, you know, please. And I wasn't pleading to God because we didn't believe in God. But I was just hoping desperately someone would come in and help me because I was in so much pain. Mm-hmm. And I heard the door open and close, and then I felt a hand slip into my hand. And and I could remember thinking, and all of a sudden the pain started to just filter away. And I thought, oh, my gosh. You know, I thought it was a doctor or a nurse had come in. They came in to help me. And I opened my eyes to look to see who had come in. And I could feel the hand. It was real. But I couldn't see it. I could feel the fingers. And then I fell asleep. And every night after that, a hand would come and slip into my hand. And I remember one night it was a child's hand. And I kept, and it was such a schism because of the way I was raised. And how could I explain what was this, that it was real? And I know you know, certainly this is of your realm, that the idea of, you know, that there are beings on the other side who are here to help us. There are angels. There are, you know, ancestors. There are guides and guardians, and they are here and they're real. And one of your amazing gifts, one of your many gifts, is that you open the door for people to enter into and commune with that realm.
Mm-hmm.
But for me at that time, that was weird, but it was real. And so much changed after that. I began to, you know, and I realized, no, those were angels. They were just like, they're saying, it's okay, honey, you are going to make it. You know, it was kind of rough, but you're going to make it. And if you started, go ahead.
No, I just want to just say that what really got me when you told that story was the fact that, you know, you didn't have any intellectual context because your parents were scientists, so you were kind of, you know, you didn't know, like, who were you praying to, right? But you were communing with spirit, and then spirit answered in the correct form for you at that moment to give you what you needed.
Some things are true even if you don't believe it.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And you can, I mean, spirit is real, guidance is real, even if you don't believe it's available, or even if you think, well, it's available for others, but not for me because I don't deserve it or whatever, it is available for everyone, even if you don't believe it.
In my mind,
I wasn't praying. I was just like, oh, please, somebody help
me.
But I,
no, but that's it. If you don't believe it, if you ask, even if you don't know what you're asking, if you just say, please, like, you don't have to believe in anything to get the help.
Yeah, and I was definitely asking, and it just, that one experience, and see, I think it's always available, and even if we think there's nobody here, nothing, just simply asking, putting out the call, as I call it, somebody hears, and sometimes we're not answered the way we expect, but, you know, but there is help there. And again, that's one of the things I love so much about the way you work with people. You're so, speaking of, you know, raw and real. You are so raw and real with people, and you are like, you open the gate and you say, there they are. They want to be with you. They want to support you. And I love that. I love that.
You know, you've had other experiences too, because I know you've told me a bunch of stories, right? So I know that one experience changed everything for you because it actually put you on your path, right? I mean, when you think about it, that's always been your touchstone.
That was
after you were shot, right? Wasn't that after you were shot?
Yeah, this, what with the angel hand holding, that was after I was shot, yeah.
Right, I know, and that, I mean, you have a whole book about that too, so it was when you think about it, you know, like the help is, like you're right, the help is there, but you had to do something, you surrendered and asked, right? You didn't know what you were asking, where you were asking, whatever. Like, I also believe the help is always there too, and the help just, it comes because we are made in the image of the Creator. We have the spark of the divine within us. And if we are here for a purpose, like, it's pretty obvious what your purpose is, right? So, you know, you've done, you know, past life regressions in front of thousands and thousands of people. And, you know, you're one of them, like, in that, weren't you like, I mean, you had like thousands of people come and see you, you know, just a few years ago. I mean, not that, you know what I mean? It's like you've made such a huge impact. I remember being so awed by you when I realized, you know, who you were. Like, you were, I was doing readings for you, like, oh, my God, it's Denise Lynn. You know, And you were meant to touch so many people with your gifts. It's like Spirit had a plan for you. And, you know, you were there, and something had to come to steer you into that uncharted territory of your life, because at that moment, you would have been, you know, another mind would have seen themselves strictly as a victim, right? They wouldn't have seen the door open.
Well, and, you know, I think I probably did see myself as a victim, because pretty much I was.
Yeah, but only that, right? You let a spark in, right?
Yeah, something shifted for me when I had that near-death experience. It's like just that glimpse of the other side began an opening of realizing that the reality that we normally experience is not the only reality, that there's this vast universe beyond the visible, beyond that which you can touch and smell and taste, that is equally real, and from my experience, even more real, more viable than this that we experience. And one of the getting back to angels, but one of the things that really opened for me was this understanding of angels.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in different forms. They and so one form is invisible. In those hands, they were invisible. So that's one form. Another form is they come in the human form that we can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and I've had been so blessed to have times in my life when an angel came in a human form that I could relate to. And after, my life was not easy before I got shot. It was, I had a very dysfunctional childhood. Just mm-hmm. there was just lots of trauma, and when I was 18 and I was living alone. I was working at a truck stop, washing dishes, and just having a really rough time in my life. And
mm-hmm.
and I felt like I didn't have a friend in the world. And I thought, you know, I can't go on. I decided I was going to commit suicide. And I remember walking. I was walking through, it was in November, and I was walking through a park to get to the river. And the river was the Maumee River. It's in Ohio. And so I was going to jump off the bridge, and I thought, that'll kill me. That'll do it. And as I walked through the park at night, on a bench, and there was like some street light or anywhere, there's a light in the park, and there was this young man sitting on a park bench. Now, you would never go up to a man in the middle of the night sitting on a park bench. But I thought, what can he possibly do to me that I'm not going to do to myself in a few minutes?
Yep.
There's nothing. I had nothing to lose at that point. So I went up to him, and I said, his head was kind of hanging down. I said, are you okay? And he said, well, no, not really. And he told me he was on the way to the bridge to kill himself. Now, this was a small town. People,
yeah.
I had actually never heard.
I'm sorry for laughing, but I get where this is going.
Yeah, I had never heard of anybody killing themselves from that particular bridge. You know, it's like a farming community. People, you know, they drank themselves to death. They got in automobile accidents to kill themselves. They didn't jump off the bridge. But it didn't occur to me at that moment. And so mm-hmm. I just started to ask him about his life and what was going on. And he was about my age, which is interesting, too.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, listen, you know, it's rough for you now. I understand it. I get it. But you know what? You have so much to live for. You have a whole life in front of you. And as I talked to him, telling him, giving him hope, I felt better.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned to him. And I could remember, as he said, oh, thank you so much. I feel so much better. You're right. And I got up, and the sun, that looked like old, dirty snow when I was walking through the, you know, through the park. And the sun was just starting to come up, and I could remember that old, dirty snow. It was glowing pink, and the whole universe seemed to have this beautiful golden pink light.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back at it now, at the time, I just thought it was just one of those events in life. But looking back now, I know that was an angel. And he came in a form that I could relate to.
Yep.
He came, and it was perfect. It was perfect. And there, you know, and there'd been so, I'm starting to cry even remembering that moment. I mean, and sometimes we don't recognize it until later. We don't recognize the blessings until later. Another way that they come is they will actually use a human form that is a familiar form but come through them in an angelic way, in a way that the person, I'll tell you what happened, because I don't think I'm explaining that very well.
Yeah, just tell the story. I'm mesmerized.
So, I just had a lot of childhood demons and just some, you know, just really, when I, you know, people say, oh, they had a traumatic childhood. I had a very traumatic childhood. And somehow all of those demons came to a head at one point in my life. And I thought, and I was living in Hawaii, and I thought, and my mother had been in and out of mental hospitals. They had put her in the first time because they thought she was going to kill me because she was so physically violent. So I was so desperately unhappy, and she was paranoid schizophrenic. So I thought, well, it's you know, must be my genes. I must be mentally ill. So I decided that I was going to commit myself to a mental hospital, because if I was this unhappy, I must be mentally ill. So I went to, it was on Sunday, and I went to the university, that wasn't the university, it was the public mental facility in Honolulu. It was the, I don't know what you call it, not a private one. What are those called? Anyway,
right.
It was the main, I'm drawing this story out anyway. So,
oh, it's great. I'm having the best time.
I'm taking
and so are the listeners.
I'm taken to the head psychiatrist's office, and there was this big desk, and he sat on one side, and I sat on the other, and he had these, there was something amazing in his eyes. It was just this luminousness, this light in his eyes, and he looked at me, and he said, you know, he said, I certainly could admit you here, but let's see what the tarot card said. Now, this is at the big mental illness facility in Hawaii. And he said, let's see what the tarot cards say. And I was in shock. I'm like, I have just come to commit myself, and you want to, and I knew about tarot cards. So he, on his big desk, he opens the drawer, and he pulled out a deck of tarot cards, which, interestingly, I knew about, because my grandmother, who I lived with for a couple years when I was a kid, was a tarot card reader, and it was the same deck, the White Rider deck. And then he starts turning the cards over, and he goes, and I'm freaking out, like, I am here to commit myself, and you're doing the tarot. And he goes, and then he grabs all the cards, stacks them up, and says, the cards tell me not to admit you. He said, what you really need to, he said, if we admit you, we will just shoot you full of drugs, and you won't get to experience what you're going through. He said, you need to go to the top of a mountain, and you need to scream for a few days. You will feel so much better. And
I love
and
this story.
I'm like, really? And he says, yep, you'll feel so much better. So I went to the top of the big mountain, and I just screamed. I freaked out a bunch of hikers. I screamed. And then I went out in the ocean where didn't think anyone could hear me. And I'm out there screaming. And then the lifeguard comes out. Are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm just screaming because this guy just told me to scream for a few days. And he was so right. I felt so much better. It was
hysterical.
This is so great. But here's what's weird. So I went a few years later. I was at an art opening in Honolulu, and someone said, oh, there's a head psychiatrist at the state mental hospital. And I looked, and he looked the same, but there was something very different about the eyes. So I went over to him because I wanted to thank him, because, oh my God, what great advice. I mean, it just totally helped me. And he looked at me, and I said, I want to thank you. And, you know, that day you did the tarot cards. And he looked at me as if I was totally crazy, and he said, I would have never done that it was not me. Like, he looked at me like, maybe I should think about admitting you to the mental hospital. And I thought, it's the same man, but it's not the same man.
Yep.
And, you know, a little bit after that, a friend of mine had been admitted to the state mental hospital, and I went to visit her, and they had her tied in her bed. She was in her own urine. She was tied in her own urine, and she was all drugged out, and then when they let her out, she would kill herself the next day.
That's horrible.
And it was, and so I realized when he said, if we admit you, we will drug you up, that my life would have been so different, you know.
Yep.
at that point, you couldn't go to Australia if you had ever been in the mental hospital.
Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah, and you're huge in Australia. You're so famous.
And,
I mean,
yeah,
you could never have gone there to help all those people.
There were so many things that would, I mean, and I don't know that I would have survived. So
no.
It was someone who took the form in that
yep.
moment. It was, and to me, that
sure.
was an
mm-hmm.
angel.
Yep.
And yeah, I have so many stories, but I don't know
keep
why
talking.
My inner voice.
That's exactly what we're doing. We're talking. You just keep telling the stories, Denise.
It was just my inner voice.
I'm amazed.
Talk about angels. And the thing is, and some people think, oh, they're there if you're holy. You do not trust it. You do not need
no.
to be holy. You do not need to be good. You do not need to even
no.
believe. And they are there. And
yep.
and they're there to help and to love and support. And but not always in the way you think.
No, I agree.
Okay. I was going to, and this is another example of one who comes in a human form.
Yep.
And I was in London, and I had the opportunity to meet with Random House in London.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, really excited because I thought, oh, my God, you know, Random House, and if they take my book, you know, then I become, mm-hmm. you know. It was like this very exciting thing for me. And Random House, I think they still are, is the largest publisher of English books in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't get a cab. And I couldn't get a cab. And I was desperate. I was just completely, you know, desperate for, like, you know, for getting there on time. And it's really funny because I believe that you need to celebrate the success of others. And if you celebrate the success of others, will succeed. And I teach that. But, you know, it's one thing to teach something, but
yeah.
then you have to, like, remind you. And you're only teaching yourself. You have to remind yourself.
Yeah.
So I was standing, and no cab had come, and no cab, and I was watching my clock, and I think, you know, if I don't get this next cab, I'm going to be late, and if I'm late, then my mind was like, I won't get the contract. If I don't get the contract, you know, I will never be a writer. I mean, it just went on and on. So I saw a cab coming. I'm like, oh, my God, there is my cab. There's my taxi. It's going to work. And I'm watching it, and then about a block away, this a man steps out, and he gets my cab. And I'm like, freaking A, you got my cab. That is my cab. I start to get cranky because I need that cab. And then I reminded myself, celebrate the success of others. So I'm going, okay, I celebrate your success. And I celebrate your success. It was a little hard at first, but because there was a stoplight.
Yeah, it's not always easy.
Time,
I get it.
Mm-hmm. But by the time he got close to me, I was able to say, you know what? I am really glad you got that cab. You know, I celebrate that fact. And here's amazing. And people in London say this never, ever, ever happens.
Right.
The cab stopped, the taxi door opened, and the gentleman in the back seat, as they are in those taxis,
as they are
said,
in England.
as they are, said, would you like a ride? And I'm like, yeah. So and I'm thinking, okay, he had a beautiful business suit on and a nice briefcase. I thought, he looks like he has money, but obviously he's picked me up because he can't pay for his own campfire and he needs help. But I'm so happy. I'm so happy to do it. Just to get there. So I gave the address, 20 Vauxhall Road in London.
I remember you sent me there. I remember I went there too.
Yeah, so 20 Vauxhall Road.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he doesn't say very much.
Right.
But he didn't, you know, seem like it. And I'm thinking, okay, so I'm going to, you know, this is going to help him pay for his ride. And so as we got there, and I looked at my clock, it was exactly perfect. I was exactly on time. And so I started to pull out my money to pay, and he said, no. He said, and I said, what do you mean, no? And he goes, this is my gift to you. And he looked at me, and when you're with an angel, there's something about the eyes. And there were these clear eyes. And then he gave the address of where he was going. It was completely in the opposite direction. So they were going to have to go all the way back and beyond. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it really was a gift. And we tend to think, well, angels just come at those big moments in life. But you know what?
Yep.
They could come at the smallest of moments. And I think they really like to help.
I think they do. And I think that they come, I feel more moved when they come in the little moments because it's like they're like God winks. You know, it's like or spirit winks or whatever you want to call the winks, because it's like you get a little nudge. I had a similar situation happen to me when I went to Hay House, and the cab driver who took me there started quoting from the Bible, but things that were so outrageous and exactly with what I was thinking about. And and like, I mean, I am not kidding you. It was what he was saying was just, and at this moment I can't really recall it, but I can tell you this, that the way he talked, it was just so uncanny and strange. And when he dropped me off, and then I actually wanted to thank him because I didn't tip him, even though the Hay House had paid for the cab. So when I called the cab company, because it was so moving. I wrote about it in my book, Remembering the Future. They didn't have a driver that fit his description. Yeah, is that not wild? Yeah, he was a very handsome black man with a bit of an accent that I couldn't place. And he was, yeah, it was just really something. And I remember looking at his, you know, just his eyes, too. It was the eyes. He was very luminous.
It's something with the eyes.
Yeah, liquid, luminous. And it really felt afterwards, because even when I thought about it afterwards, I thought what he had told me was really about trusting than having faith that whatever happens happens when you are on your purpose, and behold the kingdom of heaven is yours. That's what he made that comment to me when I left, and I remember sitting there just really, I don't know how to put it, but when there's a sense of numinous quality that all of a sudden the rest of that day took on a, you know, it's like we look into the world with a different pair of eyes, where we start to see it through awe, you know, and reverence, because we don't really know what just happened, but we sure are reminded that there is something in the invisible. I want to go back to the comment that you said when you first started talking about the fact that your parents were scientists, and before you told us about your mom and stuff, but, you know, if science couldn't prove it, a materialist science, and the separation that, you know, that certain religions have imposed, or monotheism has imposed upon this world that is really truly interconnected, makes our worldview a disconnected worldview. And so according to materialist science, you're right, we can't prove any of this. But in a connected worldview, which is now the new science, frontier, and in the frontier science, is starting to prove, well, it doesn't starting to prove, it has proven, it is proving, that we actually live in a connected universe where even nature is collaborative, cooperative. Mm. And we actually only can perceive with our five senses of only 1% of what is possible. Only 1% of light, of the light spectrum, or 10% of the light spectrum, something like that. I was just reading some research. So, you know, when we have these experiences with these beings, like I've seen I saw one that scared the living pants off me. And now
what happened?
Well, okay, so my angel story is one that I will never forget as long as I live. So I was in the form this angel came to me, or a bunch of them actually, there was about 11 of them. So I was doing a massage. I started this work 27 years ago and 28 years ago. It was 27 years ago when this happened, because it was just the first year I started doing readings. I certified as an aromatherapist as a day job. I was working as a healer while I was pursuing my career in music. So I didn't really take all this that seriously. I mean, I did. I was fascinated with it. I was interested. But I was always going to leave it behind, because after all,
you did massage.
Yeah, I did massage. I was Reiki master.
That's so cool. I didn't know that about
Yeah,
you.
Holographic. I did holographic breath work. Oh, holotropic breath work, not holographic. Holotropic breath work, rebirthing. I mean, I did it all. Like, I'm a Reiki master. I mean,
wow.
Polarity balancing, la, la, la. Yeah, but my abilities became really obvious to me when I started touching people and I could tell them their whole stories, right? No, and then really fast, very few people wanted a massage once I touched them what I could do.
Yeah.
Right? So it went fast. It like so and but wait. So this the woman who taught me the massage is also actually, she's a PhD now in hypnosis, but she was a very well-known psychic at the time from England. And she saw my abilities, and she certified me as an aromatherapist. She's a really interesting woman. Anyway, so I had developed a method of, like it was a standing massage where I would work with the person and go up their spine and talk them through a guided process. And what I found, I was doing it at this one place for recovering addicts, actually, this place in Toronto. And one day, everybody got the same name. Like I would just say, and there's a being of light that will introduce themselves to you, and who is it, right? And everybody got this Joe. Everybody got Joe. I'll never forget that. It was like 8 people that day got Joe. And I told the guy at the front that everybody got Joe. And then Joseph, Josephine, and Joe, Joseph, or Josephine. And he looked at me, and his eyes were bugged out of his head, and he said, "This is my mother died a year ago today, and her name was Josephina." And so it, but anyway, so those are the kind of things that happen all the time. So I wanted to show her this technique that I had done. So I was massaging her, but all of a sudden,
you were massaging the receptionist.
No. The woman. Sorry, I digress. It was Yvonne, the woman that had trained
your
me.
Your client.
Correct. Sorry, I'm a little bit over the map. But the woman had trained me, who is a psychic, who is now a PhD in hypnosis, etc.
Okay, you were working on her. Okay.
I was showing her this technique that I had done that I was doing at this clinic. Right. Okay. Just to show her what I was doing and kind of out of curiosity to see what she would see, like, you know, cause, oh yeah. And then one day everybody got Peter. That was the other thing. Like everybody would get the same name. So, I thought, like, let's see what you see. So I heard myself talking, but all of a sudden my body got sucked out of my feet. And, it was like, I could hear my voice at a distance. I could feel my arms moving up the back. But I was somehow being like pulled out of my body and presented. All of a sudden, I was looking at a giant door, and I saw a crack underneath it. And I was like, okay. So I went under the crack, and I found myself in this giant room that had like checkerboard floor, black and white floor, and these really big kind of cathedral. I don't know what you call them when they're what do you call them when they're up and big and
arches?
Thank you. I can't. Menopause has reduced my brain, and it's in the evening. Anyway, okay. So I looked up, and it was like really gorgeous, and I saw this giant light in the center. I was squinting at it, and it went up like a good 30 feet. So it was like as tall as a 2-story building. But all of a sudden, I realized it was a being. It was alive, and it was looking at me. But it didn't have a real face. It was just like this presence, and I felt completely naked, and I was like, what is this? And then I could see, it was like, holy crap, those are wings. Oh, are they kind of wings? But they're not really wings. And I'm like, oh my God, that's an angel. And then in my head, I heard, and you know, in the Bible, it says, do not be afraid, right? You know, when the angel shows and says, do not be afraid. Of course they say do not be afraid because it's scary. Right? It's freaking terrifying. I was scared shitless. Anyway, I'm up there looking at this thing going, oh my God. And it felt like I couldn't hide anything from it. Like it knew everything about me. And I was like so like stripped down. And then it picked me up and I was able to like poke at its supposed wing. And it was made of filaments of light and like thin threads and webbing. And I was like, oh my God, this looks like a wing. This is what people drew. This is what I'm saying. I'm going, oh my God, you're an angel. Oh my God, you're an angel. And it hummed. It hummed like a chorus of humming, right? It was this humming. So it was just like walking with me. I mean, like I'm freaking out, like freaking right out. And like, where are we going? And then it took me down this long corridor of what looked like trees but weren't trees. And the next thing you know, I see a whole circle of them. And I counted. There were 10 more. And it was 11. And all of a sudden, they started, like tossing me around like I was a ball, and they were laughing and humming at the same time. So I was completely mortified. I'm just telling you what happened. And then I would, then all of a sudden they threw me up in the air, and I went down and landed in this like beautiful, most gorgeous kind of a violet, purplish, smoky kind of like almost like a fabric. But then all of a sudden I could feel my I was putting my feet on like they were shoes. Like I was coming right back into my body, and my chest was beating, and I felt that sense of, you know, like I was high in my throat. So I stopped talking, and my friend turns and looks at me, and her pupils are completely dilated, and I went, "You are never going to believe what just happened to me." She goes, "Well, you're never going to believe what just happened to me." I went, "You go first." And she said, "Well, all of a sudden, I find myself looking at a giant door, and I thought I saw you go under the door." And she says, "But there was a ladder, so I went up and looked through a keyhole, but all I saw was the back of a giant angel. So I pushed myself through the little hole." This is what she says to me. "I follow the angel, and there's a circle of angels, and they're tossing a newborn baby."
Wow.
Because it was the strangest thing. And you
wow.
weren't there. Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, my God, wait till you hear what happened to me." So I then told her, obviously, and we would never, ever forget that as long as we live.
Wow.
And after that, here's what was
wow.
so interesting. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That happened. That really happened. But it was like, and then after that, I tried to demand that it come back, right? Like it was that time in the 80s when people were doing, you know, the harmonic convergence or 1990, or I don't know when it was, I think 1990. And, you know, it was a big thing, and then like the new age was really rocking and rolling at that time, or late 80s. And everybody was talking about angel dances and things like that and connecting to the angels, only I couldn't make it happen. So I was like demanding, like imploring, praying, like, "Come on down, like, where are you?" And it would never come back. So I was like, but it was so real. I'll never, ever forget that experience. Anyway, out of the blue one day, I'm just meditating. I had forgotten all about angels. I've stopped asking for anything. And I was just meditating. And all of a sudden, I found myself imagining myself, my mind went to dangling off the side of a cliff, but I wasn't afraid, and I'm usually terrified of heights. And there was this a wing that came around me, like from the left, like there it was, and telepathically said, "I have never left you. I will.
Oh.
I just want to cry telling you this because at that time, I was really confused about my direction, my readings. I didn't, you know, like they started happening like crazy. People found me from all over the place, but I was newly sober, so I really didn't know if I was doing the right thing or whatever. And I felt, you know, and I was distant from my family. They had lost everything, and they were drinking, and I wasn't, you know. So I had a lot of stuff to work through, and did feel very alone a lot of the time. But there was that angel, and I knew at that moment I would never be alone, and even if I couldn't conjure them up, they were there.
Mm.
They were there. And the presence, and when I wrote this book, Uncharted, it's the next time, I've had three experiences like that my whole life. When I wrote Uncharted, I wrote it with the idea in my head that it would be a sequel to my book, The Map. So I had intellectually decided this. But all of a sudden, after, you know, doing 300 readings in my TV show in Canada, and I was so exhausted, and I had really lost my center of self, like, and I was really dissociated at the end of all that, those readings, and really, I was so fried. It was as if I'd stuck my finger in an electric socket. But I was so aware of this, like, almost like a flock of birds that were this essence of something, an intelligence that was following me around. And I was like, "What is this?" So it was like somebody came to a party that you didn't invite, and they're still at the kitchen table, but they're invisible, and you don't know they're there, but you kind of know, right? So I started having this sensation of this chorus. It was a chorus, very similar to the angels, but it was like a chorus of like humming. So that's what it reminded me of right away. It's like, "Are you my angels?" But they didn't answer me that way. So I tried to explain it to my editor, because every time I tried to write my book, they would interject. and give me other really simple ideas. And I wanted my book to be really smart and intellectual and big. And it just wasn't going to happen, because then all of a sudden I hear these voices and I'm like, oh my God, I'm feeling cuckoo. So I told my editor this. She goes, well, do they have a name? She called them the spirits. And I went, they're not spirits. I know the difference between dead people and this, these energies. And she goes, well, what are they? I said, well, I don't know. She goes, well, why haven't you asked them? I'm like, I never thought of that, right? So I go into meditation, and I'm like, okay, how, you know, I tune in. And by the way, I can never really hear them unless I'm meditating and I tune in to this kind of, it's like I have to turn on a dial. It's not like they just interject, but they were in the beginning, and then now I have to plan it. So I say, who are you? They go, we are we, you are we are when you listen. We are the ocean, we are the waves, we are the wet part. We are the wet part of the ocean. And I'm like, really? It's like, I heard it clear as a bell, like it's like a chorus of voices said that. And then I'm like, okay, what's your name? What do I call you? And they're nothing. Then I'm hearing humming. I'm feeling the humming in my, like it's just something is humming through me. And then I hear Fred. And I'm like, please don't make me call you Fred. Don't make me call you Fred, please don't. And they're like, Fred,
it's going to be Avalonia or something like that.
Yes, and I wanted like Ezekiel or something biblical. Yeah. Like, don't give me Fred.
Yeah, Isaiah or archangels.
Yeah, Fred. Exactly. Like, why do I have to have the, you know, like Fred? Everybody else got somebody good, like the ascended masters and all. Like, look at Doreen. She gets all those guys. And I'm like, I get Fred. Come on. That's no fair. Anyway, so I'm like, oh, please don't make me call you Fred. But then they showed me, then here's the other funny thing. Then they showed me a picture of Dana Carvey with his wig on from, yeah, no kidding. I'm like, are you serious now? And then I'm thinking, who is this? What character is this? So I had to call, I realized this is from Wayne's World. So, and I really didn't dig that movie when I first saw it. I didn't get it. Like, that was just me. And I didn't understand it. Like, it was kind of good. It was funny, but they kind of turned me off, these characters. So I'm like, why am I looking at this character? So I had to call my friend and say, what is the name of the character from that movie? And she said, Garth. And then it dawned on me. They're naming. There's a naming going on. And in my process, the Envision process, I created an ability, and we tune in, we ask the name of the bird, like it's in my book, and you know that I've done this in the book, The Map. So then we look up the name to see in what the etymological name means, because there is an oracle in the name. So,
right.
So Garth means defender of the garden, and Fred means ruler of peace. So I'm talking to the defender of the garden and the ruler of peace, and I'm like, I am not worthy, right? You know what I mean? It was wild.
Oh, that's so funny, the I am not worthy. I love that.
Right? I am not worthy. There, that whole thing. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is going to be a ride. And, of course, that's how my book was written. And then recently, I had some big, tall light beings that showed up when I was getting a massage in Boulder, Colorado, and it was the same kind of experience, just as powerful as the first one and meeting Fred. And I can't even describe it. But all I know is, like, your stories and my story really just underline that there is a whole world of beings and energies that really are invested in helping us.
And here's, for me, the one of the many reasons that I love those encounters is I get caught up in the doingness of life. I've got to get this done on my lists, and my days are, you know, it's like if I got a lot done, it was a good day. If I didn't get much done, it's not a good day.
Mm-hmm.
And I get so caught up in all the doingness that I forget. I mean, I really, really forget about what life is about. And as soon as I stop, as soon as I just take a moment to focus, first of all, everything gets done like almost magically without so much effort. But it reminds me of what is important. And I know, I mean, it's kind of a platitude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's important is love. You know, that's what's important in life. But I don't live life like that's what's important.
Nobody does.
Like what's important is what I got done today. Mm-hmm. And so just even, and I'm so grateful that we're talking about angels, because as we're talking, it's reminding, it's like a reset button. And for me, even if you think about angels, if you talk about angels, if you focus on angels, it's a reset button. It resets you to what's really important in life or what's really real in life. So I'm just grateful.
I know. And isn't it amazing, though, too, is that these two worlds can coexist. And I'm the same as you. I'm very driven, and I'm always looking at, oh, what had to get done, and what, you know, the kind of idea also that the form of things, I mean, I can be hypnotized by the form of life too, but the truth is that spirit or the invisible is our primary reality, and intuition is our first sense, and when we're trapped in the day-to-day, we can't tune in, but every once in a while, we're nudged, right? And it's like, oh yeah, right? You know, like, I get it now. And then we fall asleep again and we go back to our lists and whatever. But gratefully, we're not asleep all the time.
Mm.
Right? We're not.
You know, there is one other way that angels appear.
Tell me.
Well, that is the traditional way with wings.
Right, like happen to me. Do not be afraid.
I have to tell you that just as we're talking, this is like one of those moments where a mother deer and a fawn have come, and they are right outside my window.
Oh, and, my God.
And now the mother's like looking at me because she probably hears me talking about her. To me, you can tell you're close to spirit when synchronicity appears. You know, we're talking about the interfacing of nature and spirit. And here it's like, I love that. It's like, hi, Mom. Hi, little baby. Cutest little baby with the little spots all over him. But the other way that angels appear is with wings. And I have never seen an angel with wings, but I've talked to people who said they've seen an angel with wings, and I'm like, it was in your meditation, right? No, Denise, I really saw it. Okay, you really saw it, or you just imagined you really saw it? It's like, you know, when you grow up with scientists, it's like that part. No.
Yeah, I'm like that too.
And there were two brothers who, they were from a farming family, and they live, you know, in Australia. And he said, Denise, one day my brother came and he yelled at me. He ran back to the house and said, come, you've got to see this. And so he said, I ran with my brother out to the pond. And he said, and there were three angels. And I said, okay, they were real angels. He goes, real angels with wings. And they were just floating back and forth across the lake. And he said, Denise, we're farmers. We don't have a fantasy life. You know, we work all the time.
Right.
We were real angels. And my daughter told me when she was little. I mean, I remember one time we were, there's another deer now. Oh, I love this.
Oh, me too.
We were driving through Volunteer Park in Seattle, and all of a sudden she screams. She goes, stop. And I went, okay, what? And she jumps. I pulled over off to the side. She jumps out of the car, and she runs. So I, like, you know, I got the car parked, and I'm, what the heck is she running? And then she runs, and she's looking up. And she said, Mom, there was an angel with wings. No, Meadow is not fanciful. It's
right.
The one and only time that she's had what we would call a flight of fancy, you know, or a fantasy. So, but she said, no, it's up there. And I said, well, what was it doing? Well, it was eating food.
Eating food.
And it was. And she said, Mom, it was real. It was an angel with wings, and it was eating food. But I have never seen an angel with wings. But I was walking, this is when we lived in Seattle, I was walking around, there's a lake in the middle of Seattle called Green Lake, and there's a pathway that goes, you can walk the entire lake, and a lot of people do it. So I'm walking around Green Lake, and I'm thinking, I've had all these other angels' experiences in life, I've had so many, but I've really never seen an angel with wings. So I'm thinking, I want to see an angel with wings.
Right.
I want to see an angel with wings. I want it. And all of a sudden, this beautiful, older black man dressed really colorfully starts skating backwards in front of me down this path. And he's just laughing, and he's looking at me, and he has these beautiful luminous eyes. And he's just laughing. And as he's skating backwards in front of me, he said, really, the only things that are important in life is love of self, love of others, and love of God. That's all. And then he laughs, and he turns, and he takes off. And I had two simultaneous thoughts. My first thought was, oh, my God, that was an angel. And my
right.
second thought was, I still want to see an angel with wings. Like, wait, oh, I mean, it was like the angel came and said, you know, forget about seeing an angel with wings. That's seeing an angel with wings. That's not important. What's important is love, love of self, love of others, and love of God. That's important.
Denise, what a fabulous, fabulous story. Oh, my gosh. We could talk for hours. But you know what? Here's what I want for us to remember, and you and I mean, we have great stories. We've heard other people's stories. And what we do know, both you and I know, ultimately, and your fawns by the window, and I actually asked for a dragonfly today, and that's an angel with wings for me. And sure enough, 10 minutes later, this giant dragonfly shows up in front of me and goes, you know, I live in nature. I think it's so important for everybody to go out into nature to really understand that, you know, angels come in all kinds of shapes and sizes. And I, too, I mean, I feel like that angel that I saw with the wings that weren't really wings that were wings, right?
I love that story.
And that was...
You took me there. I was there. When you talked about being there with that big angel, when you talked about that circle of angels, I thought, I wanted to go back. You took me there. I just thank you so much for that.
Oh, you're welcome, and all your stories, too. But, you know, there is one thing that, you know, I know that anybody who's listening to this conversation, and I'm sure we all have a story, we have to share those stories. And we may not get, I'd like to close, though, with this story about how I wanted to see another angel with wings. So I, too, said, like, why can't I see an angel with wings? Like, in real life, not just in, you know, when I'm massaging somebody and having an out-of-body experience.
Real life.
Yeah, I want one to knock on my door and show up. Right? Like in real, like show me you, right? And the day I had asked for that, it was a couple years ago. It was a couple years ago because we were still living in New Hampshire. And that morning I said, today I want to see an angel. I want to see an angel with wings. And then just forgot about it. And there was, we went to the Harley Davidson store and there was a girl in the parking lot that had a jean jacket on that said angel and it had a big pair of pink wings.
Trisha says, yeah, there's your angel and there's the wings.
There are the wings and there is the angel. I did ask for an angel with wings, right? I did. And I want it to be alive. I said, I want it to be alive and I want to see it. And I want to see it, like I want to be able to feel it and touch it. Well, I didn't go over there and pinch her. But you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I got exactly what I wanted.
Here's what I think we should do. We should go, I want to see an angel with wings floating. Floating.
In the air, yes.
Floating in the air. Floating in the air. We weren't specific enough.
Maybe.
We need to make it very specific.
You know, it's funny. I'm okay not to see things. I see so much. I mean, I'm a medium. I talk to dead people. I hear them in my head. I actually don't do that well with visual things. One time when I was in Connecticut, I was talking to a lady on the phone and tuning into her dad, and he walked literally through my kitchen. And I was like, that's enough. That's it. I'm not having those. Not in my house. Out you go. No, thank you. And it was like totally out of the corner of my eye, and I saw him, but I saw him as clear as my coffee cup. And I'm like, so I'm actually really happy to hear things, feel things, and sense them in another realm, but I'm not so sure I really want them to show up at my door. Maybe I will. Maybe before I die, I will. So I do have limits that maybe I should get rid of all my limits, and then the entire world will show themselves to me, and then I'm not sure we could handle that. I don't know. But Doreen's not crazy, and she sees them all the time, right? So
I want it to be, like, real, like your coffee cup real.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? Nature does that for me. I can ask for an angel to show up to talk to me through nature, and I will get a sign. Nature responds to me like as if I'm an orchestra leader. And it never fails. It's never once happened where I have asked for something even obscure. Okay, I want to see a possum today. And I had never seen a possum near my farm. And sure enough, a possum walked across the road. I'm like, wow. I still haven't seen the fox yet. But yeah, like things like that. But really, And I just say thank you all the time, and I really think thank you is the abracadabra. So I realized today that for the highest good, I will get what I get, and that's going to be enough. But I, like you, before you and I die, will get to see, I believe that we will get to see that angel floating, because so far, so good. Right?
My angel will probably say, didn't I tell you, seeing
right.
an angel was not as important as love. Really, just get over it. I'm sure that's what it was.
Exactly, right?
Well,
exactly.
You...
That's what they'll tell us. And now when I hang up the phone from you, I am sure I'm going to hear Fred, because I'm going to meditate before I go to bed tonight, and I'm going to see what their critique was, and they'll probably get a good kick out of our conversation and be there and be smiling, and or they'll teach me a lesson and they won't be there to come tomorrow morning. Since nothing comes with demands, it really comes to me through deep gratitude. Honest to God, it's
yeah,
like this deep
that is
sense
true.
Of gratitude. For the world. Anyway, Denise, you rock. This was such a great conversation. It was 10 times better than I thought. I mean, we started out, we had no idea what we were going to talk about. And I'm so glad that you listened to your intuition and we talked about angels, because these angels that come out of nowhere live in this extraordinary, vast, invisible realm that I call the realm of spirit, that really is our primary reality. And I do believe, too, that those invisible beings, the devas that we see in nature, the nature spirits, all of this magical world is as real, if not more so, than the world that we think is our reality. So thank you, Denise. I love you
and
so
thank
much.
Thank you so much, and I love you so much, and thank you for just being who you are, and I loved our conversation. Now I feel, especially with the little deer, the little fawn, I mean, just,
right?
I don't know, 20, yeah, like so close, they're still there. It's like,
awesome.
I don't know, 20 feet away. Does that
awesome.
Happen? So it felt like a little bit of magic.
A little
I
bit of, or a lot
best.
Of bit of magic. You definitely bring magic into my life. Thanks a lot, Denise. I love you.
Love you back.